The first case on calendar this morning is La Frida versus Black Eagle Consulting, case number 62284. As you'll see, we only have two of us this morning. Justice Perigary is the third member of our panel, and he's unavoidably absent, but he will participate fully and listen to the tape of the oral arguments. Mr. Beasley, are you prepared to proceed?
Hopefully, yes.
Would you like to reserve time for rebuttal?
Saving 5 minutes.
Okay.
Jim Beasley on behalf of James and Ellen LaFreda. James and Ellen LaFreda filed their lawsuit in the Washoe County District Court back on April 15 of 2008. Since that time, they've had problems with regard to the progress of this litigation and how it's been handled. As it will be seen, they deserve better than what they received from opposing counsel. They deserve better than what they received from their own counsel, Kent Robeson and Nancy Gilbert. They deserve better from the court. And I don't make those statements lightly, because it's hard to make this type of argument. But what happened is that after James and Ellen LaFreda filed their complaint on April 15, 2008, 3 years passed, and up until the time that Black Eagle Consulting filed its motion for summary judgment on March 2nd of 2011, no discovery whatsoever was given to James and Ellen LaFreda as far as their claim of negligent construction against Black Eagle Consulting was concerned. And I want to couch that very carefully when I say no discovery. Some discovery was provided through pre-mediation disclosures. However, at no time were the LaFredas given the opportunity or right to take any depositions, prepare any interrogatories having to do with one big issue in this lawsuit. Behind everything is the issue of whether or not Black Eagle Consulting owed a duty to Rainin and Bardas, and also to the LaFredas, to supervise, oversee, make sure that the construction of their slab-on-grade concrete floor was constructed in accordance with the plans and specifications for the project. That's the big issue. If you look at respondents' answering brief, I think you'll see there's some confusion that it's laboring under as to what the requirements were for James and Ellen LaFreda to file their complaint initially on April 15, 2008, and what requirements James and Ellen LaFreda were required to satisfy in order to prove their case at trial.
Are you talking about the Chapter 40 requirements?
I am sorry.
Are you talking about the Chapter 40 requirements?
Chapter 40 requirements, yes. If you look at respondents' answering brief, there's a number of statements that are made that I don't believe have any foundation or basis whatsoever. At page 32, lines 7 through 8 of respondents' answering brief, they state that the district court determined that the LaFreda's request for a NRCP 56F continuance would not change the outcome of BEC's motion for summary judgment. Absolutely false. Respondents go on in their brief and state at page 40, lines 21 through 23, district court properly considered LaFreda's admissions through counsel and recognized that no additional discovery was necessary in light of these admissions. Again, No basis whatsoever for that particular statement. Respondents go on, and as if to indicate to the court that James and Ellen Lafreda were provided with adequate discovery with which to oppose Black Eagle Consulting's motion for summary judgment, they say that the district court held 2 days of evidentiary hearings with testimony and exhibits were completed and reported. They also say that nearly a dozen depositions were taken in this action, including the Lafreda's own experts. And they summarize that no additional discovery was necessary or reasonably available in the event it could have corrected the NRS 6040-688 for deficiencies.
Mr. Beasley, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Is, when you're saying there was no discovery taken, is it not true then that BEC provided nearly 1,000 pages of documents for consideration at or near to the mediation in this case, or the requested mediation?
They provided a lot of documents, you know, but I could probably produce a lot of documents myself, but none of the documents were material. And that's not the point. What happened was on, I believe it was December 9th of 2010, before the mediation, okay, they produced a whole bunch of documents. Okay, 3 pages out of that document was a soils engineer letter which laid out specific items that the soils engineers for Raynon and Vargas were supposed to perform. When that was brought to the attention of Nancy Gilbert, she brought to the attention of opposing counsel that, well, those 3 pages were pages 2, 3, and 4 of a fax transmittal. Nancy Gilbert wanted to obtain the first page of that fax transmittal. On December 16th, 2010, Nancy Gilbert was assured by counsel that opposing counsel that particular soils engineer letter, okay, was not a part of any contract between Black Eagle Consulting and Raynon and Vargas. Okay. What happened then is they proceeded to mediation. Okay, on the first day of mediation, okay, that soils engineer's letter, was produced. Nancy Gilbert requested that opposing counsel and Black Eagle produce the first page of that fax transmittal. Okay. On the basis of that request, the mediation was continued from that date in January to the date in February. Okay. And on February 18th, Black Eagle Consulting produces another document. And it's the document which was the first page of the fax transmittal. Okay, and notably, the first page of that fax transmittal, which made reference to the contract number between Black Eagle Consulting and Raynon and Vargas, it said, please revise your contract to include the items that were specified in the soils engineer letter. This is something that alarmed Nancy Gilbert. After receiving that particular document, 12 days later, Black Eagle Consulting files a motion for summary judgment, on March 2nd, 2011. Okay, in response to that particular motion, Nancy Gilbert filed her opposition, and basically what she said is this. Hey, up to this point in time, we have been allowed no discovery whatsoever. Up to this point in time, Black Eagle Consulting hasn't filed an answer. Up to this point in time, we have not been able to take the depositions of any of those individuals from CBC, Black Eagle Consulting, Raynon and Vargas, who might specifically know, what the scope of the duties were that Black Eagle Consulting was to perform for Raynon and Vargas. Basically, Nancy Gilbert said this. She threw herself prostrate before Judge Steinheimer and indicates to her, hey, we don't have the needed discovery to submit to our experts to determine, for them to determine, okay, whether or not a duty was actually owed by BNC to Rainin and Bartus to observe the placement of the slab-on-grade concrete floors. We need
if
to
that's the case, then how do they meet the statutory certificate of merit requirement, if that's the
two different issues totally. Okay, and I go to great lengths, you know, in the reply argument to explain what the two differences are. And basically, they're the I think I better go on and I'll waive the 5 minutes. Basically, they're this. Okay, when you file a civil action, when you file a construction defect action, at the time a plaintiff files that particular pleading, okay, the plaintiff, the attorney for the plaintiff, need not have all of the evidence, you know, before him.
But wouldn't they have enough to generate an issue of fact as to summary judgment? I mean, that's a pretty skimpy burden. So you would think that you'd be in a position to do that.
Not when it comes to the issue of duty. Okay, in order to find out whether there is, in fact, a duty, you have to go to the parties involved and say to Rainin and Bartus, okay, was there a contract, okay, between Rainin and Bartus and BNC for you?
So your point is that's discovery that you needed to get from them. It wasn't within your client's control.
I am really sorry. My hearing's really bad.
Okay, your point is that plaintiffs needed to get that from the defendants because that would not be something they had within their possession and control.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Okay, and I, you know, I've cited the cases which say that at such time as you initially file the complaint, you know, there's no requirement that you prove a prima facie case. All you have to do is prove a colorable claim. That is one that was based reasonably in fact in the law. And that is what occurred here. I'd like to point out that in this case, on two separate occasions, okay, the court, Judge Steinmeier, okay, determined that the certificate of merit that was filed by Bradley Epstein, okay, and the declaration that was filed by John Sino were sufficient to satisfy the requirements of NRS 40.688884.
As to BEC?
As to BEC, definitely.
Okay.
And those took place. On September 9, 2010, and on April 9, 2012.
Mr. Beasley, two questions. Number one, I know that you're in a difficult position because you weren't on the case initially. So first question is, did anyone notice depositions of any of the parties in order to find out what, if any, contractual relations there were? And number two, isn't it true that from the time of the filing of the complaint that the posture of this case changed rather dramatically when, in fact, an expert who might have been retained to support the claim said, I'm sorry, I cannot author or execute a certificate of merit in this case?
I don't think so. The posture didn't change at all. It's a simple situation from April 15, 2008 up until March 2nd, 2011. James and Ellen Lavreda had no right to engage in discovery. Okay, no answer had been filed. If no answer had been filed by Black Eagle Consulting, they could not engage in discovery. Another thing that happened after consolidation took place, you know, in 2008-2009, there was a master appointed. Okay, and the master determined that until such time, pursuant to the order of Judge Steinheimer, that James and Ellen Lafrida fulfilled the requirements of mediation, you know, with Black Eagle Consulting, they had no right to engage in discovery. It put them in a very serious bind, because the, okay, the master had also issued a report that the parties could not come in and introduce new claims or new parties, okay, after, I believe it was, February 1st of 2011. And so what we have is a situation after that deadline had passed, okay, we have a motion for summary judgment been filed, okay, the basis of which cannot be contested by James and Ellen Lafreda because they were not given or allowed the opportunity to engage in the discovery which was needed in order to get documentation and evidence which they could provide to their experts. Your hands were tied. Thank you very much for listening to me. Okay.
Thank you so much, sir.
May it please the court, my name is Nathan Allman, the law firm of Ferendorf, Valoria, Olafon, Oster. I'm here today on behalf of Black Eagle Consulting Incorporated. Today we are requesting this court affirm the lower court's August 8, 2011 order granting summary judgment in the subsequent award of attorney's fees, cost, and interest based on the fact that the admission from appellant's counsel was properly admitted and used as evidence in the underlying summary judgment motion. We'll be discussing today various issues. The appellant's counsel focused on one particular issue that they have appealed in this matter, and that was the request for further discovery. We will address all issues. I will address the other issues first to ensure that I have enough time to cover.
Actually, I would like to hear your response to the points that Mr. Beasley made first, which is to say, why was it not an abuse of discretion to grant the 56F request?
Your Honor, this court in OTAC versus 8th Judicial District, 129 Nevada, Nevada Advanced Opinion 86, from 2013, discussed the abuse of discretion standard and discussed the substantial information that a court has. It went on to state that the substantial information is based on essentially a reasonable person standard. So we need to take a step back and look at everything that the court evaluated in coming to its conclusion regarding additional discovery. This takes you back essentially to the start of the litigation and the start of the Chapter 40 process. Throughout the entire litigation, starting in 2008, there has been an ongoing dispute as to appellant's compliance with Chapter 40. It has been argued that throughout the process they have failed to comply with Chapter 40. That issue was originally addressed to Department 7 and Judge Flanagan, where he granted Black Eagle's motion for summary judgment. The cases were later consolidated into one action under Judge Steinheimer. Judge Steinheimer allowed a motion for reconsideration, which brought Black Eagle back into the litigation. However, at that point in time, Black Eagle objected based on the compliance with Chapter 40 and based on the compliance with the Certificate of Merit requirements. This issue was part of various motions. The court then stayed the action to lead to evidentiary hearings to evaluate appellant's compliance with Chapter 40. The court determined that appellants did not comply with Chapter 40 when they originally filed the action in 2008, and they had not complied with Chapter 40 at that point in time. What the court directed was the parties go to mediation. And that's important because the appellant's argument continues to be that they needed further discovery to evaluate the reasonable basis of the claims against Black Eagle. The purpose of Chapter 40 sets out a process to evaluate whether there is substantial evidence to bring a claim against a design professional. There is the mediation process. That's governed by NRS 40.680. NRS 40.681 is the pre-mediation discovery statute, which allows a party to request and be provided pre-mediation discovery. In this litigation, that was requested, As Justice noted, there was nearly 1,000 pages, I believe it was closer to 750, that were provided that were specific to the appellant's claim in this particular litigation. Those were provided for the first time that they were requested when we started going through the Chapter 40 process. In Ms. Gilbert's opposition to Black Eagle's motion for summary judgment, she noted two very important things. She noted, first, that it was in December 2010 that she first provided all of these documents to appellant's expert. She stated later in the opposition that in January 2011 that her experts could not form a reasonable basis for the claims against Black Eagle. That's important. NRS Chapter 40 for design professionals essentially has a heightened pleading requirement for attorneys. There's two requirements under Chapter 40 NRS 46884. One requires an expert, in the same field as the underlying expert that's being sued. They have to evaluate the claims. They have to evaluate documents. They have to form a reasonable basis for the claim against a particular defendant. And this is important because one of the objections that Black Eagle had made from the beginning of the litigation all the way through the motion for summary judgment and continued that was the underlying report from John Cino upon which the 2008 original complaint was filed never mentioned Black Eagle. The declaration of John Cino just said defendants. There was other experts. There was structural engineers. So our contention was
in fact, your client is a design professional. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor. Geotechnical engineer.
And therefore would have required, presumably, a design professional affidavit.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And that was what we disputed from 2008, that Mr. Cino, who is the expert retained by the appellants, was a structural engineer. He didn't mention anywhere in his report that there was a defects related to the design professional Black Eagle. That was one of our contention points. The affidavit from counsel said differently. But we fast forward back to the statement by Ms. Gilbert in 2011 where she specifically states in the opposition to Black Eagle's motion for summary judgment, her experts don't have a reasonable basis for the claims against Black Eagle. That's after the documents were produced. There was no argument, on the record at least, in terms of what the documents were. Appellants go to great lengths to talk about this particular fax and particular cover page, which still has not amounted to any point claim. The point being, in the requirement, the heightened pleading requirement in Chapter 40 for design professionals is NRS 46884. Ms. Gilbert's February 15th letter and subsequent admissions in the opposition essentially retracted any previous affidavits from any attorneys that said there was a reasonable basis in law and fact for the claim, when she admitted at that point in time there was not a reasonable basis in law and fact for the particular claims. Black Eagle properly utilized that admission to file its motion for summary judgment. At that point in time, the court had overseen this litigation for years. It had various information. There was various hearings held. So I'd submit to you that a reasonable person in this situation, the court, made a reasonable determination that no further discovery was necessary because that discovery, there was sufficient discovery that they should have had prior to ever filing the claim against Black Eagle.
What did the discovery consist of? I mean, it's 700 pages of what?
It was 750 pages of the job file, the reports that Black Eagle did on the project, various contracts, various reports, which they do, which the geotechnical engineer does, which is in their job file specific to this particular lot, specific to this particular phase. I note I discussed in the record later on that Black Eagle at one point in time finally produced its entire job file, which involved phases and developments not related to appellant's home at all.
How do you respond to Mr. Beasley's concern about not having the documents by which to assess duty and therefore duty and its breach?
Your Honor, I would submit that that's the entire purpose between the certificate of merit requirement, is the appellants had the ability. They failed to do it in 2008. The court ordered them to mediation in 2009. They had the ability at that point in time to get the pre-mediation disclosures. They had the pre-mediation disclosures. They had all the documentation there that would discuss the scope of services provided by Black Eagle for this particular project. Whether they dispute or question or don't know exactly what those scope of services are, that's what is required. Those documents were produced, provided, and apparently in 2010, in December, and in January 2011, it was confirmed by Ms. Gilbert that the experts did not have a reasonable basis for the claims against Black Eagle, a point that we had been attempting to make on behalf of Black Eagle since the inception of the litigation. So we believe that they had the sufficient documents to be able or not be able to file a certificate of merit. As the case may be, upon review of those documents, their experts specifically stated, and Ms. Gilbert specifically admitted, that the claims did not have a reasonable basis. So that goes to the heart of the requirement of the certificate of merit. And the judge's discretion or abuse of discretion evaluation in terms of whether further discovery is required. Judge Steinheimer concluded that further discovery was not required. The admissions told the story. The admissions proved the case we had been trying to prove for years. There's the argument that that appellants were entitled to further discovery to essentially continue to try to evaluate whether there was something related to Black Eagle, but I submit that's why there is a certificate of merit requirement, to protect the design professionals who provide highly technical services from being drugged through litigation where without an expert, lay people simply don't understand what the scope of services are, what they're providing, what the design professionals are providing in terms of the services. And that's the situation we have here. That's the reason why you have the certificate of merit requirement. And that's why this court has specifically recognized and upheld the certificate of merit requirement in various cases in various situations involving design professionals.
Could you address the attorney-client issue in the context? I mean, Ms. Gilbert sent this letter to Mr. Robison, and perhaps they had some sort of joint privilege going.
Absolutely, Your Honor. This involved a letter from February 15, 2011, where Ms. Gilbert provided to Mr. Robison, Robison, Bellastegui, Sharp, and Lowe, and stated in that particular letter, stated, we are not providing confidential information. There's two separate paragraphs where Ms. Gilbert repeats, we are not providing confidential information. The third paragraph after that states, I've contacted our experts, and they don't have a reasonable basis for the claims against Black Eagle. NRS 49095 governs the attorney-client privilege and states that an attorney-client communication is between the attorney and the client regarding some portion of the litigation. Ms. Gilbert's letter and then subsequent further admissions in the opposition to Black Eagle's motion for summary judgment detailed her, the attorney's conversation with the expert. It's not the attorney's conversation with the client. It was the attorney's conversation with the expert, which is not privileged, and would have to be disclosed pursuant to the heightened pleading requirements in NRS 46884. If Ms. Gilbert, as the counsel for appellants, doesn't have a reasonable basis for the claim, it creates a situation where there should have been an affirmative duty for Ms. Gilbert at that point in time to withdraw her earlier affidavit of merit, which she filed.
And the experts to whom she's referring are the same experts on which she ostensibly relied to bring the suit in the first place.
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And those experts, one of the experts was the original expert from 2008 with the Bradley Epstein.
So that much was disclosed, that there was this attorney relationship with the expert, and the expert was giving the attorney a reasonable basis to go forward with the suit.
In 2008. And then
right, and then they recant.
Exactly. And that brings up the question of, under this heightened pleading requirement, under NRCP 11, do you have a duty, essentially, to withdraw an earlier affidavit if you do not have a reasonable basis for the claims? Submit to you that we believe that they should. And that's why the court properly allowed and admitted into evidence Ms. Gilbert's letter, and then subsequent to that, her statements, as well that they were, in fact, admissions, essentially saying the exact same thing that NRS 46884 requires. But, in fact, Ms. Gilbert's statements say the opposite. Her experts don't have a basis in fact. She doesn't have a basis in fact or law to bring the claim. And therefore, the court properly admitted that particular letter and the subsequent admissions in evaluating Ms. Gilbert's letter and determined it was not attorney-client privilege. Ms. Gilbert and Mr. Robeson at the time were in an adversarial position. Ms. Gilbert volunteered this information after expressly stating that she would not provide confidential information, and thereby the court properly admitted that particular statement by Ms. Gilbert. Additionally, the communications had nothing to do with an attorney-client discussion. It had to do with the attorney expert discussion.
Well, but they can fall within the ambit of the attorney-client.
Except for the fact that all of that information would have been disclosed and would have been required to be disclosed during a deposition.
That was a disclosed expert already.
Correct. Yeah. It was disclosed because those experts were disclosed earlier in terms. I see my time is up.
Your time is up. Thank you very much. I want to thank both counsel. Mr. Beasley, do you have something you want to say?
5 seconds.
Well, I'll give you 1 minute. How's that?
Oh, okay. That's very good.
I'm going to ask this court to pay particular attention to the reply brief that was filed by me in this case. It pointed out the misrepresentations that were made by counsel in connection with his answering brief. One of those misrepresentations was the fact that the same misrepresentation that was made here today. And Mr. Ahman said, all the documents, all the discovery was provided to James and Ellen Freda and Nancy Gilbert, you know, prior to the motion for summary judgment, prior to the mediation. Okay, it is an absolute falsehood. Okay, the documents show that in early December they made a production. They produced the three-page soils engineer letter. Okay, they denied the fact that three-page soils engineer letter had anything to do with Black Eagle Consulting's contract with R&B. Okay, but then what happened? Okay, Nancy Gilbert requested the first page, you know, of that fax transmittal, and the fax transmittal, which was produced on February 18, okay, of 2011, showed that R&B was directing Black Eagle Consulting to make that soils engineer letter a part of its contract with R&B.
Okay. Thank you very much. I want to thank both counsel for their briefs and arguments. They were very well done, and this matter will stand submitted. And we'll be at ease while the next group of lawyers comes forward.